You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore, this week brought to you by the Silver Scythe. Nestled within the serene embrace of nature, the Silver Scythe exudes an air of tranquil opulence. Crystal clear waters imbued with mineral-rich properties cascade from ancient volcanic springs, inviting guests to indulge in their restorative embrace. Surrounding elegantly designed bathhouses, meticulously manicured gardens bloom vibrant flora, harmonizing the exquisite natural landscape with human artistry. The Silver Scythe. When a hoe won't do.
I feel like we played a game of like introductory chicken at the start there, where I was just like, is he going to start talking? Do I have to do it? What's going on?
I was like giving more room tone than usual. So yeah. Inside baseball for all of our devoted listeners, sometimes I have to listen to silence because silence isn't actually silence, so I have to copy and paste silence where silence is supposed to go, and it's fucking weird.
All right, save it for the editing episode. We don't want to give away all of our tricks.
Oh man, as soon as we hit like 200 Patreon subscribers, we're gonna do a live stream of me editing this shit, and you can listen to us 300 times.
As far as I know, you edit alone and in silence, so
it would not be a very engaging stream.
Just silence the whir of a fan for your laptop, and you know, the occasional click and grunt, and then just my dumb voice in the background through your headphones once in a while.
And just like the camera is going to be aimed at me, and I'm not going to be changing the way that I like dress, so it's just going to be like me in a pizza stained t-shirt and no pants.
Perfect. Like,
that's so the for way any of our listeners that are still left, we should do a podcast.
Yeah, let everybody stop imagining Christopher Porky Pigging it out here.
All right, so
okay,
I wanted to continue on. Yeah, part twos. This is our second series in a row now.
Yeah, we got continuity and callbacks.
I don't know how to feel about that.
Mostly, I was just like talking about weird ideas, because
yeah,
at the end of a long day of working with people, sometimes you just want to talk about D&D and dumb D&D stuff, and this is a really good version of that.
It is. So the first one I want to start with, and like this is the most exciting magic item that I think anybody has ever gotten.
Hold on, wait.
Oh.
Just for the people who haven't heard the last episode, we are talking about doing our own takes on races and items and monsters.
How dare you assume that people didn't listen to our last episode, Josh?
Because we have new listeners every week, as our content is so magnetic and engaging that we pull them out of the deepest depths of the D&D subreddits out into the light of day.
Brave of you to assume that I've ever posted this on D&D subreddits.
You might not have, but...
Uh-oh. All right. So doing our own takes on stuff, the most important, the biggest, the coolest, the craziest magic item that anybody ever gets, the plus one sword.
The foundation of magic weapons, the anvil upon which the creatures of the night are broken.
Third edition actually did something that was really interesting with magic items, especially like the plus one magic items. So they had, and I don't know if they carried this over to fourth or not, I can't recall, but they had a category of non-magical weapon that was called a masterwork.
Oh, no.
Okay, so masterwork items were mundane items. They were non-magical in properties, but they still had that plus one just because they were so damn good.
Yes. This was actually one of my first introductions to items in D&D in general. I know, like, I didn't jump into D&D until 4th edition, but my good reading skills and profound ADHD combined with just a weird work schedule for my parents that often left me trying to fill gaps of time at like the local library and things like that, I read mm-hmm. physical copies of like Dragon magazine and stuff like this. And I love like gear. That's why I play like RPG video games, is just to get items and stuff. Like ARPGs absolutely do it for me. But I devoured an entire article about like different alternative types of materials that would make different versions of masterwork items for 3.5. So it was like stuff that like explicitly wasn't magical, but like because the splint mail was made from like a type of bark, the sap was like sticky, and like that property was imbued in the armor so that, you know, attacks that struck it like couldn't pull free as easily, stuff like that. So yeah, super familiar with what it is just from like a stupid amount of information I crammed into my dumb little brain that I remember 30 years later.
Yeah. I didn't actually read that article. I actually have like a stack of Dragon magazines sitting next to me like right now.
Okay.
I loved Dragon magazine, and I think it's a damn shame that we don't have it anymore. I mean, I understand why publishing magazines sucks.
Yeah.
But yeah, plus one, the plus one sword, the plus one long sword is such a staple in many games. And like fourth edition just assumed you would get one.
Yeah, fourth edition was the equipment lover's dream, where it was assumed that like more or less every major encounter you would get some sort of item for the group. And the game was balanced around accumulating magic items, to the point where when they introduced Dark Sun, an area famous for not having magic items, they had to introduce a new mechanic for how to give those benefits to your players.
And that also introduced the idea of like breakable weapons, which was great. I actually heard somebody on like an actual play use that for like fire-hardened spears recently, like just making javelins out of wood by themselves, but if you roll the net one, then it breaks, and I was stoked to hear it. So how do you make, other than like going the masterwork route, because I do love masterwork as like a way to get a superior weapon to other weapons, how do you make a basic magic weapon cooler?
I mean, not to beat this old dead horse again, but I think that 4th edition did a really serviceable job of it by saying, okay, here's... Because, like, right now I look at the magic items for 5th edition, and it's all, like, legendary stuff. You know, it's the... You could call it the Eberronification of the world, but, like, plus one sword should be lying around the place, but they all have unique properties. So you have a plus one flaming sword, a plus one acid sword, a plus one, you know, ice sword, things like that. I think that is a fun, unique, interesting way to do it. Just give them different little elemental flares.
Okay, so I don't want to be like a poo-poo on your idea, but as soon as you do that, then you end up with like the troll problem of like, I set up this encounter that has a troll in it, and you guys just have a flaming sword, so the troll's regeneration means nothing.
Yeah, but then that's your job for being bad at designing encounters. You should... sorry, are you not keeping track of what your stupid group has? Like, what are we talking about here?
I feel attacked.
I know what I've given people, and I remember, oh yeah, I better keep in mind that he has a staff of... I don't know, fucking orc explosions, and I shouldn't put too many orcs in the room or he's going to explosion them all. Like,
it's funny, I'm definitely not keeping as close a track of like their gear as I should be, but I also haven't been giving them as much magic gear as I should be.
Right, which is just 5th edition. Like, it's really stingy with it compared to 4th edition, which is fine if you're rebalancing the game around it, that's fine, but like, yeah, I don't know. You also don't have the kind of magic stuff lying around in 5th edition that can really break the game.
I did the absolute laziest loot drop that a DM can do, which is like, we had a little labyrinth that was going to be a lot more fun because it was the first time we were playing with like the Roll20 lighting effects.
Okay.
but one of my players couldn't use those lighting effects because it was just blanking out his screen entirely, so I had to turn them off. But there's just this chest sitting in the middle of like the center of the labyrinth, and that one was a mimic, and it was the first time that they fought a mimic too, so everybody was like, ah, cool, fucking mimic. Yay! He did one of the iconic monsters. And then there was another chest that was like tucked away behind, and so everybody was like very gently poking it with sticks and shit. And it was just a chest full of random gear that I had like earlier rolled on the tables for, because I hate random tables so much.
But why? They're so handy.
Handy, but lacking in narrative cohesion.
Yes.
But we were dealing with a dragon, and when you deal with dragons, dragons have hordes.
They have
stuff that you've tucked away. And this dragon horde was a pit of molten gold.
Ooh.
Right, so it was like a crucible at the top of a tower that was being magically heated.
Right.
So that the gold stayed molten all the time, which makes it really hard to steal the treasure. But all of the magic items, all of the cool stuff, all of the stuff that you didn't necessarily want to have in this pit of molten gold, was either indestructible and sitting at the bottom of the molten gold, or was in a chest.
Oh, okay.
That was like tucked away to the side. And so I just gave them a chest full of stuff. And like one of them was a plus one shield. And I know that one of them has a plus one hammer kicking around somewhere. I don't know which ones have which. They've got some potions. I don't know what the potions do. I mean, I'm gonna come up with an encounter that's gonna be so like incredibly like well thought out, and somebody's gonna be like, oh yeah, I have a potion that literally just solves that problem.
And they'll be like, wow, that's news to me. I probably shouldn't have given you that. Oops.
Or like maybe recorded that I gave it to you somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I the Eberronification of plus one swords, like I play in Eberron quite a bit, and I love the idea that you can just buy a plus one sword at any bodega.
Yes.
It's just like, you've got that guy with, have you ever been to the fair and there's just that guy with the knives?
Yeah. You mean like every gas station in the South?
Every gas station in the South. And like, if you go to any fair in Alberta, it's like a tent and there's like a guy who's selling slushies on one side and a guy who's selling knives on the other. Yeah, you just, like, you go there, you look at the knives, you're like, that one looks cool, and then you buy it. And it happens to be a plus one magic sword of stabbing.
Yeah, I love that idea.
I love that idea. I also like the opposite direction.
Okay.
Where nobody has plus one swords.
Okay.
Right, like, a plus one sword is magic and weird, and nobody has one. And so when you get one, it has a name and a history and like a legacy attached to it.
So because that Dark Sun.
Dark Sun, but also like, I'm thinking Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay. Right? Yeah. Like
there
Sting
isn't a,
is like a thing, not just, yeah.
Yeah. Like it has a name and it glows when there are orcs around, but like, that's just a cool ability that that one sword has. But like,
right.
I would say that there isn't a single weapon in Lord of the Rings that is bigger than a plus two.
No, I don't think so.
Right. And so like, when you get a plus one sword, that is a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
Obviously for like mechanical reasons, you can't necessarily throw that down.
Sure.
Although with like fifth edition's problems with action economy, it might not be a big deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that that's one way to do it, is just like make plus one weapons rare.
Yeah.
Right. Plus anything more than that is going to be significantly more rare. And when you do present a plus one weapon, because like the swords that they find in the troll hole aren't great. Like they find a sack of swords in a troll hole. And then later find out that those have history and names.
There was one good one.
There was one good one. Two good ones. I think Gandalf takes the other good one.
Yeah, if you believe the Peter Jackson movie, but
yeah,
I have problems with the Hobbit movies.
As you should.
Yeah.
I have a bit of a weird faux pas that happened around the Hobbit movies, because I watched the Hobbit trailer and I had my rose tint glasses full tint.
Right? Oh.
All the way up. Couldn't even see them, just red the whole way through. So I saw that trailer and I was like, this is going to be the greatest movie that's ever happened.
Okay. And then?
And then I told a reporter that as a representative of the store.
Oh no!
A declarative statement that I was speaking on behalf of nerds.
Oh, and no.
My co-manager at the time, the guy who managed the comic shop side, shout out Matt Bowes, came up to me later and he was like, are you a fucking idiot?
And he was right to do so.
He was correct. I fully admit that he was correct. The trailer, having looked at it again many years later, is dog shit. And I should not have said anything. And also, I should never speak declaratively about things on behalf of anyone that isn't me.
Yeah, that's also an excellent policy.
Yeah, I have a tendency to do that. I hyperbolize. But, yeah, no, like the finding of the swords in The Hobbit is some standard-ass D&D bullshit.
Yeah.
You accidentally killed some orcs or some trolls and then looted their hovel,
yeah,
and found a sack of swords from some elves that they had eaten earlier.
Yeah. Also, like, how did they get to eat those elves? That doesn't seem right. If they had those swords, those elves should be, you know, semi-confident.
Yeah. I mean, the trolls seemed like they would be difficult to deal with.
Did they?
If you dealt with them the same way that the dwarves did.
Huh. Yeah, true.
Which is just, like, run up and try and, like, body them.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. Right? So, if the elves were in we're going to body them mindset, I don't think that they would necessarily have been particularly easy to defeat.
True.
You got to get sneaky with it. Got to get a robber.
Anyways. Yeah. Yes.
Anyways. Plus one swords. Either make them really rare or make them really not rare. Just everybody has a plus one sword.
You should have like a little umbrella stand at the front of your tavern for your plus one swords.
Yeah. One of the other things that I've seen with them that I think is kind of neat is like making them out of stuff that swords shouldn't be made of.
Okay.
Right. So like a plus one sword made of glass.
Oh, Skyrim.
Sure. I didn't play enough Skyrim to know that that's a thing.
Yeah, yeah, glass weapons are, like, a thing that the elves do.
Yeah, I'm just imagining, like, filigree glass or crystal. A sword that is made of wood, so it doesn't look like it's particularly imposing, and then it does more damage than a normal sword does.
isn't that just, like, a club? Like, just swing it harder.
Yeah, but it's sharp on one side. Like, it's one of those, like, wooden practice swords that somebody actually sharpened because they're
Yeah. I'm just saying, like a wooden sword is just a club. Like, they're all clubs.
Yeah. I actually saw, like, I've been watching too much anime recently, but I did see an anime where an elf used a wooden sword as her primary weapon.
Okay.
And it was, like, shaped like an elven sword, but she was a druid, and so it made sense that, like, her weapon would be made out of wood.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a neat detail that they threw in there. The rest of the series was terrible.
Whatever. Yeah.
I mean, I say that mostly for your benefit, because I know you're not about that weeb shit.
No, but I'm not.
At some point, I'm going to like sit you down and force you to watch some fantasy anime with me. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to happen. We'll do it live.
Actually, that would be a great, like, our first live episode.
It's just first live
me
stream is
just us suffering.
All right, you pick the next thing.
Okay, let me see. So we just did items. Should we go back to species?
Could.
Yeah, actually I want to talk about Warforged. Okay. So Warforged are one of my favorite races of all time. I think there is so much possibility when you're talking about an entirely constructed race. I think artificial races are neat, and the variability, like, you've got a modular race. You do whatever you want, mm-hmm. right? Did I put the book away? I did. Hold on. This is important. I'm gonna wheel over and grab it. One second. I have to grab the Tome of Heroes. There, the book, the Tome of Heroes, recently published, mm-hmm. for 5th edition by Kobold Press, has something in here for a variant race that they call Gearforged. It's Warforged. It's just Warforged.
Mm-hmm.
But they've done something with it that I have tried to do in the past, and I think is really neat, is that default Warforged are just humans, right? They're humans with gears and whatever. Gearforged, they're like, hey, what if your chassis wasn't human?
Right. So what if, like, a horse chassis?
And then the examples they have in here are, like, obviously you've got the human chassis, but you've got a kobold chassis, or a dwarf chassis, or a gnome chassis. And I really fuck with that idea.
Can you, like, mix and match parts? Like, do you do, like, a gnome chassis with, like, human arms for, like, a gorilla-looking motherfucker?
Like, you could. they've got ideas of, like, hey, here's, like, certain components that all, the core of which all of the Gearforged are going to have, but you can, like, swap things in and out, because why not? They're modular, right? You just have to, you know, make sure it, like, makes sense on that chassis. So we had a, there's a couple of things I've done in the past where I tinker with the idea of a Warforged. One, you take that idea, I believe it's in the core 5th edition Eberron book as well. I'm 99% sure it was 4th edition, but all of their items that they acquire can just be, like, integrated into them. Like, they're not held, they are attached. They are part of your body.
It'd be kind of funny if, like, your whole body was magnetic.
Yeah, right?
So you just, like, stick things to you like a fridge.
Yeah. so, one, I basically treated a Warforged like Inspector Gadget for a long time, where there are things about his body and his capability that he doesn't know, because they are concealed and they reveal themselves at certain times. The other thing I did was I had a friend playing a Warforged Rune Priest, and what we had was that his entire body was covered in runes, and he had a memory wipe, like his data banks were corrupted. And as he was able to restore some of them and learn more things about himself and his capabilities, more runes would light up and in different configurations. And he could activate the runes on his own by touching them, but he didn't know what any, like, aside from the ones that he already knew, he didn't know the different configurations to access different things. He was allowed to experiment with combinations. And the way I managed that was just by having it, if he input an incorrect combination, he would often wind up short-circuiting himself, which required a 4-hour reset.
Okay.
So he couldn't just sit there and mash buttons.
I think now it would be interesting to roll on, like, the wild magic table. Right, like, now that we have wild magic sorcerers,
yeah.
You can just, like, adopt that table. Or, like, you punched in the wrong things, and now you're a squirrel for the next, like, 2 hours.
I think that'd be fantastic. And especially with the idea from, like, the Gearforged, like, different chassis, like, he suddenly just folds up and is a mechanical squirrel.
Yeah. I dig it. Oh, man. You just gave me the idea of, like, Warforged Transformers. Just having, like, a couple of different modes that you can roll out, but they're, like, mutually exclusive.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so you have, like, car mode Warforged, where you just, like, turn into a motorcycle or some shit, like a motorcycle with a face.
Yeah.
And then, like, you can transform into person mode, where your wheels are on your shoulders as, like, pauldrons or some shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't hate that.
See?
I think I might have to build a character for that. No, I think, like, for me, the draw for Warforged is Data from Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, not necessarily in that same vein. So, like, Eberron, there are a lot of Warforged kicking around, like, they are everywhere.
Be, yeah.
And so you don't get as much of the, like, I'm the only one of my kind thing going on, but you still have the, like, do I have a soul?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Am I a person? Right? Like, I am a magical construct that was made for the purpose of destruction. What does that make me now that I no longer have to destroy things?
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, that personal thought is kind of where I'm more drawn to the Warforged rather than, like, their physical form.
Sure.
But that's just my, like, incredibly narrative, non-crunchy side. I also just apparently want to make a, like, motorcycle Warforged.
I just want to recreate the GoBots in my next campaign.
Did you? Okay. This is a bit of a weird tangent, but did you see that the Transformers put out, like, really tiny toys for a little while?
Yes, I had some.
Yeah, my son loved them for a hot minute. He doesn't anymore.
Sure.
And didn't for quite a while. But, like, I liked them more than he did for a while.
Yeah.
It was just like, this is a to-go box of Chinese food that is also a robot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now I kind of want to make, like, a bunch of tiny Warforged that are like that.
Yep.
And actually, that kind of leads into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, which was Mimics.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right,
Mimics, so, like, are like flesh Warforged,
like flesh Transformers. Yeah, I was just thinking, like, if you had, like, a little to go box that was also, like, a mimic.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, like, what, you go to open some Chinese food and then it eats you.
Yeah, what if the food ate you back? Is that, yeah?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. Or, like, one of my favorites is to just fill a room with different mimics.
Oh, they think they've got the one, and then you're like, they were all mimics?
There's the obvious one that's, like, the chest, right? So, like, they open up the chest, and the chest is a mimic. It spits its tongue out. It tries to eat them, whatever. They get rid of that one, and then they, like, and one of them sits down on the bed, and the bed tries to eat them. Right? And just, like, everything in the room is just, like, because I imagine a mimic is, like, as the way that they spawn is they, like, lay eggs or whatever, and then those eggs hatch, and the thing immediately becomes something else that, like, makes sense in that space. Right? So if you have, like, just an empty room in a dungeon somewhere, an empty room in a castle, and you have, like, six or seven mimics that have hatched in the space, one of them turns into a dresser, one of them turns into a bed, one of them turns into a chest, one of them turns into, like, a mirror, right? Like, you've got, like, all of the furnishings of this bedroom.
The whole mimic family, yeah.
The whole mimic family is living here, and then you can slaughter an entire family of mimics and feel bad about it later when you realize that it was, like, mommy, daddy, and a bunch of, like, eggs.
My daughter went down a weird rabbit hole of mourning the death of the family and pets of the potatoes that we were peeling for Thanksgiving. So... yeah, I kind of get the same vibes out of that. Hey, humans, inanimate thing that you shouldn't care about.
We will anthropomorphize anything.
Yeah.
And then, like, choose to care about it, which I think is one of the best traits of humanity. Like, you know, we will take literally anything and immediately glomp onto it, and that is the most important thing in the world to us now.
You can tell she is my kid, though, because that did not stop her from continuing to cut these potatoes into tiny pieces. Even as she said, this was his cat, and then cut up the potato.
I'm thinking, like,
go ahead.
Mudang.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Like,
tiny hippopotamus that's adorable.
Oh.
Yeah, just like the entire world has fallen in love with this fucking pygmy hippo.
I was going to say, how appropriate is it that your Chinese food mimic made me think of the snack that bites you back, which is Doritos, the gamer fuel.
Our first ad read.
Oh, dude, if we get if we get Doritos as a sponsor, my life will be complete.
Doritos and Mountain Dew, and then we have our claim to fame.
Forever. Actually, no, you know what? Here's what's more accurate, and I'm angling for this one for real. Fuck Doritos. I want a sponsorship from Ariba's, the, like, orange zesty nacho bag. Send us 500 of those, and I'll talk about you for the rest of my life. That's all I want.
Yep. Yep. For me, it's Coke Zero more than the Mountain Dew.
Do you mean Diet Coke? So,
no, I mean
the Coke superior Zero, drink. Good one.
The good one. Yeah. Continuing.
The only thing we agree on is that there should not be any calories.
Yes, zero calories. I would like mine to have flavor that isn't dust.
Cool.
And we're fighting again.
Yeah. This will be the argument that ends the podcast. As a former Coca-Cola distribution employee, I think I have experienced all variables in the sugar replacement cola world, and I still land on Diet Coke every time.
That just makes your failure to identify the right Coke all the more disturbing.
Coke Zero is an imposter. Here's the problem with Coke Zero. I'll summarize my problem with Coke Zero. Coke Zero is trying to taste like Coke.
And does a pretty good job.
Diet Coke is not. Diet Coke is its own thing, and that thing is superior to Coke. Don't compare Diet Coke to Coke. You can only compare it to itself.
See, the thing that I like about Coke Zero is that it is, in my opinion, a strictly better Coke.
Okay.
It tastes like Coke. It doesn't leave that weird shit on my teeth.
If the flavor you want is Coke.
It is. I like the flavor of Coke.
And that's what I'm saying. The flavor that I want is Diet Coke, which is not Coke. So being closer to Coke does not win you any points.
Specifically, if they could get it to taste more like American Coke. Because, like, I don't know if any of our American listeners know this, but, like, American Coke and Canadian Coke taste different.
Yes. And Mexican Coke, which is the best Coke.
Absolutely the best Coke, but not the flavor I crave. No. Right? Like, the flavor that I crave is the, like, corn syrup Coke of America.
Right.
Like, it's a little bit sweeter. It definitely leaves that film on my teeth even more.
Yeah.
Because, like, the plaque reads that is there, and it's just like, cool, kill him.
Yeah.
But if they could make Coke Zero taste like that, fucking perfect.
I mean, sure, I guess. I haven't tried Coke enough in the States to actually know the difference, so I'm going to take your word for it.
Mexican Coke is cane sugar, I think.
Yes, it is.
And it is delicious.
I have had tons of that.
So anyway, if a mimic turns into a can of Diet Coke, I will be safe. A can of Coke Zero, you will be safe.
I guess we'll ask them not to do that.
Yes, please do not be Coke's mimics. That I always kind of like the idea of, like, thinking about modern day versions of D&D stuff. Okay. So, like, modern day mimics would be horrifying.
Oh, sure.
They have so many options.
Yeah.
And, like, could specialize in which types of victims they went for.
Yeah, that's one of the most terrifying things I've heard you say.
Just, like, you've got an entire breed of mimics that turns into, like, dumpsters and garbage cans and bags of trash. And all they hunt is homeless people. Homeless people and cats. Right?
Like, homeless cats, that's watch out.
Yeah. But then you've got, like, another entire breed of mimics that focuses on looking like really nice computer cases, and they're just after nerds. They think nerds taste better.
Yeah, okay.
Any mimic that looks like a car,
yeah,
they just get in your mouth. They just get in your mouth.
All right. Everyone, this has been a good run. Now I've somehow, like, contracted secondhand body horror.
That does seem to be my forte. I'm just going to have to start writing horror novels.
Okay, you know what? Sure. If that's your takeaway, go for it, pal. Fucking, all right, whatever.
Let's, Let's talk about another thing. It's your turn to pick a thing.
God. All right. Jesus. I'm all... I don't have any strong feelings about these items, particularly.
No?
I want to talk about... What did we talk about before? Did we talk about dwarves? We talked about dwarves.
Talk about dwarves a little bit. We could always talk about dwarves more.
No. Hey, you know what I'm going to briefly talk about in that you shouldn't talk about them?
Half-elves?
No.
No. Drow.
No.
We already talked about drow.
It's my mortal enemy on that list.
Short people.
They are short. You got that they correct. They are
short. Yeah, it's Kender.
It's Kender!
It's Kender.
Anyways, we're never talking about Kender again. Bye!
They're just worse halflings.
They're worse halflings, and the only, like, fleshed out example of them is just worse than everything. Like, he's a really bad example of what you want your thing to be.
There are a few things that I like about Kender. Mm-hmm. The species proclivity for theft.
Obnoxious,
but also potentially intriguing in NPCs. Like, obnoxious NPCs. That is something that, like, it comes from an era of role-playing that is more antagonistic and, like, thrives a bit more on inter-party conflict.
Yes.
We're not as about that in more modern D&D settings, I feel.
Right.
But, like, as a NPC species, like a species that does not realize that taking things that don't belong to them is wrong.
I guess. It's so annoying to deal with. Like, yes. I can't get on board with a race that just gives me strife constantly.
I think the way that I would maybe adjust that, because, like, they are intelligent. They are,
I guess,
capable of, well, they're capable of concerted thought, right? They are able to put thought towards things and come to conclusions. And eventually, if you are working within a culture that is not yours, you do begin to adopt their norms.
Sure.
Right? Like, the biggest issue, I think, with the Kender as they are presented is that they never get it, right? Like, there's never a point where they're like, oh, literally every other species gets really mad at us when we take stuff. Maybe we should fucking stop that.
Right, because they've, in theory, been interacting with, you know, the greater world for decades, centuries, a millennia. So
what I would maybe do with that is make it more of a cultural thing. Where, like, this is a group of people who do not have personal property.
Right.
Right. They just don't own things. Nobody in this community owns a thing.
Right.
You can walk into anyone's house. You can grab a frying pan from their cupboard. You can start cooking with it. And as long as you clean it, and you can bring it home.
Yeah.
If they're missing it, they'll come to your house and get it.
And understand that anyone else might walk in and eat it later.
Yeah. Right. So, like, if you build that as, like, a cultural norm for a group of people, then that presents the opportunity for, like, intercultural conflict.
Right.
Where, yeah, they're taking stuff, but they don't realize that they shouldn't, because their entire culture is built around the idea that nobody owns stuff.
But, like, that's, right? I was going to say, taking implies that they now have ownership of it. They're not taking it. They're just currently using it.
Yeah, they currently use it, and then they put it away in their stuff because it's more convenient.
Well, they have to put it away, and here's a spot. It's just here. It's just, this is where this thing exists right now.
Yeah. So, like, they don't even conceptualize it as taking.
Right.
And at the same time, like, your entire crew of people is going into monster lairs, stabbing those monsters until they are very dead, and then adding their stuff to your own stuff.
Right.
right? So, like, I can understand where that, like, if you are raised in a culture where personal property does not exist, and you are interacting with people whose entire profession is taking stuff that doesn't belong to them.
Yeah.
I can understand where you would be a little bit miffed when people get mad at you for having something that wasn't yours.
Right.
Right. And so that creates some interest. But just having it be like a species thing.
Yeah.
One comes off as kind of racist.
Okay.
Right. Well, no, like here's an entire like race of people who can't help but themselves but steal.
Right.
Right, just an entire race of kleptomaniacs.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Okay, so, sorry, I sort of distracted myself thinking for a second about, like, why on earth, ever, would someone of a species that doesn't, like, have the concept of, like, okay, they don't have the concept of property. They really don't have the concept of, like, wealth, you, right?
Yeah,
so, really. Why would he engage himself in an activity that is just designed to, like, generate wealth? Like, why would he need to accumulate wealth?
See, I don't think that is what they are doing, right? So, like, the other defining features for the Kender are that they don't have fear. Like their species is immune to fear, and they have an insatiable curiosity.
Okay, so no, I'm not saying like I pose that as a question intentionally. Like if the construct of adventuring is the accumulation of like wealth and or status and or power. Those are all like kind of inherently selfish things. So a race that mm-hmm. like doesn't have that concept, why is he out adventuring, right? So like you said,
right.
Insatiably curious, right? They just, yep. God, I just got to see what's over that ridge because who knows what it is, right?
There is a hole there and I'm going to go in it and I'm going to poke whatever is in there with a stick just to see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And like you said, you start, you know, the curiosity thing goes a long way. And I mean, the lack of fear also explains some of their, like, have you ever heard of the concept of being like, disagreeableness in like, as a measure mm-hmm. of, yeah. So these people would have an insane level of disagreeableness because I think at the core of it, that is just a fear of conflict with other people. Right? Mm-hmm. They don't have fear, so they're not worried about conflict. They're, in some ways, just insanely logical. They don't get caught up in that particular emotion.
I wouldn't even necessarily go logical. I would say that it's, like, driven by other emotions.
Yeah.
So, like, you're not worried about getting into conflict with somebody because you don't worry about things, right? Like,
yeah.
you have no anxiety about my actions are going to cause negative things for me in the future. You have, I need this thing.
Yeah.
Nobody owns stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go and get the thing that I need and I'm going to use it and I'm going to put it somewhere that's like convenient for me.
Sure.
And then somebody starts blowing up about that later and I'm concerned about the fact that they are now aggressive.
Yeah.
Right. That's weird. Why is that happening?
Yeah. I thought we were friends.
Yeah, I thought we were chill, bro. Like, if you need the frying pan, here's the frying pan. Like,
it hasn't gone anywhere. You didn't lose it. It's right here. Yeah. Here you go.
It exists. It was in this stuff that I carry.
Yeah,
not even my stuff, just the stuff that I carry. So yeah, I think that like, one thing that I would maybe change about the Kender, would be that they would breed like rabbits.
Oh. Oh no, we don't need more of them.
No, we need, okay, like the reason for that is because if you are immune to fear,
yeah,
your children die a lot.
You know what? That actually, yeah.
So you need to make up with that with sheer numbers.
Yeah. That actually makes a ton of sense. You're just constantly losing kids to, like, environmental damage.
Yep.
Just, hey, I wonder what would happen if I jump off of this shed.
Yeah.
Oh, Timmy's dead. Like, I think a very blasé attitude about death would be a thing. So, like, everybody else is worried about the fact that one of your player characters just died, and the Kender is just like, wow, maybe he shouldn't have stuck his head in that mimic.
You know,
we'll know
okay,
for next time.
Okay. So this makes me wonder if, like, if that version of a Kender parent would be like an absolute helicopter parent, but just like in a weirdly passive, like, tone, but still like, no, I have to be constantly over top of my child or they will die.
Again, very similar to rabbits, I feel, right? Where, like, you have a lot of babies.
Right.
And then when a threat comes, everybody acts as one to avoid it where possible.
Right.
But, like, when it comes to no threat, the babies are just going to do what the babies do. If one of them happens to go missing, meh.
Well,
that's one fewer babies than I have to worry about.
I guess that's true.
Shit, did you see The Wild Robot?
No, I haven't.
There is a great scene early on with an opossum mother.
Okay.
Who has, like, six babies that are crawling around on her back.
Yeah.
And she can't remember all of their names and keeps calling them the names of, like, the last litter.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a moment where one of the kids, like, there's a gross crunching sound. And one of the babies is like, oh no, Tom! And the mom is just like, there goes one of them. And then Tom comes back, and he's like, yay, I'm alive! And she's like, oh, good. She's like very exasperated that her child is still alive. That is my version of Kender.
Okay, yeah. I'm down with that.
Yeah, I think I've fixed Kender.
Yeah. I hate them, but if they're dying a lot, then I'm okay.
And in, like, grotesquely hilarious ways.
Yeah, I want to see, because, okay, there's generational knowledge gets passed down, especially, like, mm-hmm. Especially amongst what I'll call prey animals, which I think Kender might be.
Yes, absolutely.
So at this point, they'll know to avoid a lot of the things that are problems, right? But that just means that the things that will kill them will be new horrors beyond our comprehension. Like, they will die in wild ways that we never could have thought of and have never seen before, because their race hasn't seen them before, so they haven't learned to avoid them.
Okay, I also kind of want to make them immune to sarcasm.
Oh, yeah.
Right, like, if we're going to treat it as, like, a cultural thing, their culture is very straightforward.
Okay.
Right, there's no, they don't do a lot of subtext.
Yeah.
It's you say what you say, you mean what you say, you're truthful as often as you can be, right, you're not lying. And so when somebody's like, hey, you should get in that catapult, they're like, all right.
Yeah, I feel like
they just get in the fucking catapult.
Honestly, I feel like that level of honesty would be sort of a natural outcome of a race without fear. Because, like, I feel like fear is the root of, like, skepticism. And if you don't have fear, then you're not going to be, like, skeptical of anything anyone says. You're just going to trust them. So if people are preconditioned genetically to trust what you say, then you have to be very careful with what you say, because they're just gonna do it. So yeah, I like the idea of super, like, direct speaking that, like, I mean, not to, like, put too fine of a point on it, but that Drax level of, like, I don't understand subtext and sarcasm.
Yeah. And I think that, like, if you lie to a Kender, or if you, like, put a Kender into a situation that could kill them,
yeah,
they don't fear that, but they recognize that there is threat there.
Yeah. Right?
So, like,
you are now a person that they cannot, like.
Yeah. So they're now hyper aware of you. and they're not going to listen to anything that you say. Yeah. They're going to assume that everything that you say is a lie, because they cannot trust that you're going to tell the truth in life or death situations.
Yeah.
Right. I fucking love this version of the Kender, and I think I'm going to introduce them in my next game.
Great. In attempting to warn people away from them, I have now increased the number of Kender in the world.
Go read every Dragonlance book. Tasselhoff Burfoot, new favorite character.
She's got enough money, don't read her books.
No.
Anyways. Alright. Can we do one more? I think we got time for one more.
Yeah, I think we got one more. Time for one more. And I think it's my turn to pick because you picked Kender.
I did pick Kender.
Much
to my chagrin.
Let's go with dragons.
Oh boy. All right. We're going to run.
I was going to do another species, but we just finished a species. So we're going to, or do we want to? Okay.
We might. I'm going to say I could talk about dragons for an entire episode by myself. So.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to switch my choice then.
Okay.
We'll do dragons next time we do one of these.
All right.
Githyanki.
Okay.
Githyanki and Githzerai.
The Gith.
I hate them.
Oh.
I hate them so goddamn much.
Why? Because they're boring Asian stereotypes that were just made as kind of a racist joke.
Definitely part of it. Yeah. And also they only serve like one narrative purpose.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you're not involved in either the like Gith conflicts between the Githzerai and the Githyanki, uh-huh, or the Illithid conflicts between the Githyanki and the Illithids.
Yeah.
You've got nothing to do with them.
Yeah. More or less.
Right. And they suffer a lot from like the Klingon problem.
Yeah.
Of just like, here's this warfaring race that is only about fight.
Yeah.
And have somehow managed to convince somebody to build them magic spaceships to go fight mind flayers in space.
Hey, someone's got to do it.
And like, they could be the best alien species.
Yeah.
Right, like, and again, similar to Klingons, where, like, Klingons in Deep Space Nine were interesting and faceted and had, like, layers. Where Klingons in the original series didn't even have head ridges. So, yeah. Like, not a ton to go off of there, but I don't know. What would you do to make the Gith more interesting?
Okay. So I will talk about the Githzerai. Okay. So first of all, I think the core idea of the Gith as a race that exists purely as like a juxtaposition to mind flayers is both like unique and interesting and very limited. I think that's my core problem with the Gith, is that they only, like you said, they have one purpose. They only exist to oppose the Illithid. So I want to take a look at the Githzerai, and I think the biggest problem is that they basically locked an entire race into the monk archetype. I appreciate an ascetic character. An ascetic race, though, is like I said, it's very, very limited, and I want to see them interacting with the world more. Like, if this was like the first time they had introduced the Gith into the setting, and it was like, hey, they don't know anybody or anything, great. That then you can play off of that like otherness of them, of hey, we've withdrawn from the world, we were, you know, hiding in limbo or whatever for the longest time, But now they've been around a long time. And it's okay. This is something that, like, the Games Workshop guys are doing more of now, is, like, actually progressing the narrative. For decades, that game was stuck in a limbo, where it was just like, this is where the setting is now, this is what's been going on, here's the history, but, like, nothing's happening. And now they're actually progressing the story and introducing characters and new technologies and concepts to the setting, because they want the overall narrative of the game to progress. And I think that's something that Dungeons and Dragons needs to do. Is that it's been in this holding pattern since the 70s. They've introduced some new things, but, like, it seems like for something like the Gith, that, like, when did the Gith first get introduced? Like, I don't know, 95 or something?
The 80s.
Like, yeah, like, it's been forever.
Yeah.
Move their influence in the world ahead, you know?
Well, and I think, like, the Illithid conflict is a problem.
Right.
The stereotyping is a problem.
Yeah.
Right, like, with the fact that we have an entire species of, like, monks or fighters.
Yeah, and for the most part, it's pirates. Just monks. Yeah, you got pirates monks on the one side, monks on the other side. Yeah.
That's an issue. And, like, I want to know more about their society that isn't based around their shitty religion.
Yeah.
Because, like, the religion is also kind of bunk.
Yes.
In that it's, like, one person who has achieved apotheosis, I guess.
Yeah.
And, I mean, my interactions with the religion are admittedly largely coming out of Baldur's Gate 3.
Right.
But, goddamn, did I ever hate everything to do with that.
Yep.
Least favorite storyline. Didn't even have her in my party most of the time. So, like, I think what I would probably want to do with the Gith is establish them as an empire that has actual reach.
Right.
And a goal. That isn't just wipe out the Illithids, right? Like, if you were to make them, if we want to keep with, like, the Asian influences, go with, like, space Imperial Japan.
Right.
Right, like, they are just a horrifyingly violent invading force that will take over anything and everything. For honor.
Right.
For the thrill of doing it, and for the stories that will be written in the stars about you for generations to come. And then make them want to take everything over. Right? So, like,
For the Gith Yankee specifically.
For the Gith Yankee specifically, yeah. Like, and even then, like, I would like to see, like, more conflict between, like, the two forces of the Gith Yankee and the Gith Sarai. Like, give the Gith Sarai their own faction in space, right? Treat them like the Romulans and the Vulcans.
Right.
Right? They're essentially the same group of people, but they have very different philosophies, and they're both trying to expand into the rest of space.
Right.
Right? And then just have, like, a normal-ass game of Greyhawk doing Greyhawk things, and suddenly you have a new feudal overlord that came from the sky.
Right.
What do?
It's right? Funny, because, like, some of the stuff you mentioned is, like, so they put some of the stuff in, like, the history of the Gith. Like, as Gith herself, you know, revolted against the Illithid leaders and stuff like that, and then, that second faction under Xerthamon, like, kind of rose up, like, her argument was, let's make an empire. Let's kill them and make an empire. Then he was like, well, then aren't we just as bad as they are? And maybe we should just, like, take a step back, you know? They're basically defeated. We can, like, learn about ourselves and improve as a culture. That'd be nice. And then they just, like, didn't do anything with that. They're like, yeah, and then they fought, and then now that's the end of it. Like,
we could see that factioning.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I might even put that into, like, the factioning between the Githzerai and the Githyanki.
Right.
Like, the Githzerai were the ones that were like, look, that look, let's not do empire. Let's do federation. Let's do, like, fun democracy things and, like, get along with all of our friends and neighbors.
Yeah.
And then the Githyanki are like, fuck that noise. We're taking everything over because we need, like, breathing space.
Yeah.
In case the mind flayers come back. Right. Yeah. And the breathing space will never be enough.
Yeah. Yeah. You need that, like, buffer zone. But it's always, like, and so, it's always pushing out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, you have outposts that are being created that are, like, crushing the locals under your heels because you need to have that as an outpost in case the elephants attack.
Yeah.
Right. And then I would also maybe consider getting real into the politics about it. Like having your god be the like head of your government sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like you don't have the ability to have interplay in the politics if it's literal word of God or nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So like take that out. Make her like, I don't know. One of the problems with gods in D&D in general is just like how present they are. Have her fuck off and do her own thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like she's got her own shit to do that isn't running her empire or whatever. Have like a faction or like even have like her as the godhead, but she's kind of like separated from things and then have your like military leader who is actually running shit.
Yeah.
And doesn't necessarily listen to what the goddess is saying.
Sure.
Right. Like then you have like factions, you have people that are vying for power in different directions and that creates interesting dynamics that the Gith are desperately lacking.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you had it.
Cool. Well, I guess we're probably going to have to do this like 37 more times.
If you insist, because we have at least one more episode of Just Dragons.
We have at least one more episode of Just Dragons, and then I have to come up with the absolute worst version of Kender, because I came up with the best one.
Fine, and I will come up with the best version of a Gillette.
They can't be improved upon. They're already perfect.
They could talk that.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.